Session number 7304, reel 13.
Colonel King, reel 13.
Right. The another case we got was, I think it was 120 in all, of which 40 plus were killed. And that was out of, one's got to remember, a total battalion of 400 strong then. Discounting the rare elements, one quartermaster and one's drivers and people like that who didn't actually go into the assault, it wasn't many soldiers who went into the assault, and we lost a hell of a lot of them. I would say we lost a third of the people who went into the assault in casualties, which is rather tremendous. As you know, I mentioned the fact that we came out in one company with only a sergeant major and a dozen odd men, a dozen 16, that was the total of the whole lot, no officers at all. We had 12 officers killed, 12 officers as casualties in the first assault, actually. Some were artillery, there's no doubt about it, but most of them were from small arms fire.
So would it be fair to say that the artillery disorganised you to a certain extent, disorganised and delayed you, and the small arms fire was much more lethal?
Yeah, that's right. The artillery you met just before you came over the crest. Small arms fire you met when you got to the top of the crest. And they had two batteries of 75s, millimetre guns, in the position. What they had in battalions, sort of thing, don't ask me, I don't know. All I know was we counted 1,600 prisoners. God, I don't know how many were killed, honestly. And I don't think we just buried them on, or got them to bury them, make the holes themselves and put them in. I honestly don't know. A couple of 88 millimeter guns, two of them, and innumerable heavy machine guns and mortars. But I didn't see any mortars at all. You asked me that before, I didn't see any. No, anti-tank guns and machine guns, innumerable number. And that was it. By nightfall, we were all absolutely on our chin straps. The IO, myself, and the signal officer were on duty. Spent the night doing turns on duty. None of us, I suppose, slept more than an hour at night. The reason was that the wounded of the battalion passed through us were coming back. They were trying to find the field ambulance. It was black as pitch, and they didn't know where they were. And we, unfortunately, our battalion headquarters, being rather in the centre of the position, they came straight past the vehicle, the duty vehicle, in which myself and the signal officer and the intelligence officer were either sleeping or trying to sleep beside or on duty inside. And there was very little sleep. And we then had to guide them on foot. One of us had to guide them on foot to the the field ambulance setup in the middle of the sort of area. The following day was interesting. One woke up with a sense of tremendous relief, thinking, "Thank God, I'll stay over for a moment anyway." Poor old 416th Punjabs were just still battling away. They'd taken a long time. They had really met some pretty tough opposition. Because we think that despite the fact we took 1,600 ruddy prisoners, that they, a lot of people we attacked had moved back, had retreated, so to speak, into Libyan Omar. And all they'd done was to strengthen the troops in Libya and Omar. And they had a rough time. It took a long time. I don't think they had as many casualties in the all-in-all as we had. First of all, they were stronger, man for man on the ground. And B, they had gone in the dark. So they hadn't had the same number of casualties. But they had a very tough time. Well, came then the then there was a monumental flap. Because by the time midday, I suppose it was, after the Sidi Omar Nuova battle the following day of Marwa battle, the Germans reacted. The penny had dropped. They'd obviously heard. They knew that Sidi Omar Nuova had gone. Libya Omar was nearly gone. There was a pivotal point there at the end of the war with nothing to stop anything sweeping round there except Birsha Fersen. And they were down. They were behind, westwards, of the Omar positions and some panzers down west of Birsha Fersen, which is southwest of the Omars. And they thought, they reacted. And they did the thing, which is, after all, it's an extremely good idea. They knew that, obviously, the advance would go through or pivot round those positions that were held. So they swept round the back. And all the positions that were held from Capuzzo south were from Capuzzo south, along the line of the frontier war. They went round down the south and round up the back. And what did they meet? They met supply columns. They met field ambulances. They met Vimy workshops coming through. They met all the echelons coming through. Now,
so they got between you and your base?
Yeah. We expected that to a certain extent, but not quite to the same extent. They came through there. What did these columns do? They headed as fast as they bloody well could, and quite rightly, to the nearest foam base. So the thing that happened, we had brigade headquarters, we had supply columns, workshops, I mean tank workshops, infantry workshops, you name it, we had them all trapped in. Until by the end of that evening, that night there, in that area, which was whatever it was, 2.5 miles deep by about 3 miles, no, 1.5 miles deep by about 2 miles broad there, must have had 1,000 vehicles. That's all right, you can get all your own vehicles spread out, but you tell some of these base wallers who come along and park. You tell a field bakery he can't have two vehicles close to each other. The bloody man says he can't bake his bread. Or whatever it is. That's just an example. I probably didn't have a field bakery. But the fact remains, we had this clutteration now. With virtually supply lines cut off.
And how many of your men were in fighting condition?
Of our men? Well, we'd only gone in 400. We lost 120. That is all casualties, 120. So we didn't have a hell of a lot of men there.
Were there any fighting troops amongst this?
Oh, yes, there were. There were some. There were some. There were some reinforcements, people coming up. In fact, but we had several supply columns and poor Richard Field ambulances coming, rashing in the rate of knots there, screaming blue murder. Well, they'd never been exposed to being fired on by tanks before, and they were coming in there having been shot up by German tanks. Anyway, to cut it short, by that night, well, we had these vehicles in, and I wouldn't say I estimated it could be 1,000 for all I know, with our own vehicles there, with our brigade vehicles there, with two battalions, well, one battalion worth plus brigade headquarters and all their vehicles, we must have had, and all the other pieces that came in there, must have had 1,000 vehicles. Never seen anything like it in my life. And what happened? We got bombed that night.
Did you have any air defence?
Bofors. Bofors. Full stop.
But Bofors presumably limited to fairly low level.
Yes, and of course you can't see. And by night you didn't know what it was bombing, you didn't know where they were. Now, I'm probably talking out of school now, but this is a perfectly true story. So we spent a night, that's the second night there, you know, being bombed, flashes all over the place. Funnily enough, only two vehicles were destroyed. One was an ammunition vehicle, which made a nice little firework display, and some other vehicle. It was gone. Hardly anybody hurt. I think a few people damaged. We woke up in the morning, of course, then it all went disappeared, and woke up in the morning. And what they had done was, before they bombed us, they dropped flares, parachute flares. So they could light up the ground all beautifully and drop their bombs, you see. Didn't have much effect, so I assumed it didn't hit much. Next morning, we found these parachute flares. And do you know what they had on it? An anchor, RN, Royal Navy. We'd been bombed. been bombed by the Fleet Air Arm.
Not by a German.
Wasn't their fault. I mean, I've got to say it this day. It was not their fault. They had been told, badly briefed, to go straight along the wire until you come to the last bunch of enormous concentration of vehicles on the wire. I was among them. And that'll be your German panzers.
So they were looking for the panzer division that had already moved out.
They were already moved out.
And so it appears
or moving out anyway. And we were the last people on the wire. There was nothing around Berchtesgaden worthwhile. And we'd had all this number of vehicles in there. And they thought this must be it. They could see it they could see that on the ground without their flares. And when they dropped their flares, they could see.
It sounds like there was a 24-hour delay in information getting back from the front line to Alexandria.
I think so, probably. Anyway, it's probably nobody's ever mentioned that before, and I don't think you'll find it mentioned in any book. But it was perfectly true. That was perfectly true. But it was, I think it was slightly glossed over, but there was no doubt about it. And we sent a little sort of note to the Fleet Air Arm afterwards and said, thanks awfully for bombing us. They got a reply, yes. They got a very nice reply from it. But I think that was on the second night there or the third night there. I can't remember.
Did the Germans make a direct assault on the campus?
Well, yes, that happened afterwards, yes. I can't. I think it was still the following day when, by this time, the 4th 11th Sikhs had been pulled in. They'd been out on the, they were part of the other brigade, and they'd gone to take this place called Kuovo. But there was no point in them staying put there. They would be rather isolated on their own, so they were hauled in. And they formed another flank, virtually, of the defences there. So we had 416th one side, on Libyan Omar. We had Royal Sussex on another side. And we then put in the 4th 11th Sikhs, facing virtually eastwards, if we wanted something facing eastwards.
So you were virtually in a brigade position at that time.
And then with our guns, roughly, within just behind the 4th 11th Sikhs. And then the panzers came in. They thought, we thought this bunch out. Tanks came in. And the guns held their fire. They have tanks come on and come on until they were almost within the battalion 4th 11th Sikh position. And then they opened up over open sights. And it was an absolute joy to see them, to stand there and watch them knock these tanks out. Because the tanks had the same problem
that you had earlier.
Which they came up over and didn't realise they were bloody well on a crest. They stood, there they were, on a crest like that, and some started moving along it. And the mediums, we had a medium. By this time, as I say, there was division artillery, bits of corps artillery. We had some medium regiments there. And they thought, we're not going to be kept out of this either. And the mediums had to go to the tanks. And there was nothing, there was no finer sight than to see a medium shell, HE, obviously, hit a tank. Because you wonder, you know, oh, well, they direct hit, and the thing just, bloody on mark, see the turret go off 20 foot in the air. Incredible. It was great. And then all the troops cheering. Ah, sweet, sweet. No, no, it was very good. It was very good for morale. Because, A, successful battle. B, successful aftermath. We felt responsible for all these supply columns and stuff that came in. C, then the next thing is you saw the whole of the sort of armoured division of your own and all its columns going, keeping frightfully close to you and going round, curling round you and through onto
on the, towards their Tobruk, advance.
On their advance, working round and up north-west towards Tobruk. Terrific. Nothing, no greater thing from the thing. With a very chirp battalion. What's left of it, mind you.
When the German armour put in their counterattack, was it just tanks, or did they have infantry with them?
They had infantry with them, but very few. They had a similar organisation to us. We had, you know, with an armoured brigade, we had a motor battalion. Well, one battalion spread amongst an armoured brigade is not very much. And they had a similar sort of thing. And they had some these foot troops mounted in these sort of personnel carrier things, open the half track things, and I suppose they were the people who had taken one or two of the supply columns. I mean, they actually captured a couple of supply columns and rifled them of all the goodies and things like that, and left the people on the ground. They didn't take the personnel. Knocked off the vehicles and left the people on the ground because they couldn't take them prisoner. I mean, they had no means of transporting them.
They just left them in the desert.
They were picked up later on by somebody coming along behind, you know, British people.
What scale was this armoured attack on you, would you say?
There were obviously more than the number of tanks I saw, which is six. Of which I saw four knocked out and two retreat away. Because I'd heard afterwards that, they had let Rommel, the expression was, Rommel has let his panzers loose. And we knew that down south, to the south and to the west of us, at that time there was the whole panzer division. And we knew from the stories received from the wretched supply columns and workshops and stuff like that, that there was a hell of a lot of panzer tanks floating around, knocking them about.
And after receiving this rebuff, did the Germans make a renewed attempt?
No, they didn't. They didn't. No, by this time, they were fully occupied elsewhere because our armour had started coming round and through in various places, and the Germans had to do something about either otherwise they would be cut off. And they had to get back out of it. And this is when the retreat they came back went backwards for a bit and then came forwards again because they were. It was all then. It was like playing battleships, manoeuvring for position. But it was an armoured. It became much of an armoured battle.
How long were you in Oman over before you were relieved?
Well, now I can tell you one thing. I was there. We were getting terribly short of water. This was our main position. Our water had to come a hell of a long way. Well, that's all right. We have water trucks now, we managed, and we thought we had 7 days' worth of water. But what do you do when you get another, God knows how many hundred people into your camp? And the fact that all the supply lines had gone for several days, and we had no ruddy water. And a man was down. It's the first time everyone in my in the battalion, the CO has said there will be no shaving. And there was no shaving. And for 10 days, I had a 10-day growth of beard. I remember that. So we were damn short of water for a hell of a long time. And we were down to a water bottle virtually a man per day, and that included cooking, so he had half a water bottle a day. Fortunately, by the grace of God, that time of year in November, it is not hot. It is nice and warm by day and bloody cold by night. And so one could do with it. And also, one managed to find a certain amount of Italian bottled water there. But there was no water. And there was no water. You see, Bercheferzen, which is a water, is a well area, there was water down Bercheferzen. The sappers couldn't use that because there was two out in the blue. They were south of Omars, you see, on the Wire. And, I mean, too much out in the blue, and one wasn't going to chance that. And the German panzers were around to start with, so there was nothing in the Omars in the way of wells or any water point. The nearest one was up further up the Wire, as far as I can gather, up towards Capuzzo, up that way. And so one water had to come a hell of a long way, either from the east or from the north down the Wire. And we were bloody short of water. And but I know we were there about 10 days before we moved.
And where did you go when you moved?
Ah, well, that's a good story. We went across the desert westwards in various columns. We had another battle about after we left the Omars, about, I suppose, a fortnight. We had another battle there where, again, we met some panzers. Again, we had another action. And so it went on, right away, all the way after we finished up in Tripoli.
But had you been...
Up in Benghazi, rather. Benghazi.
Had you been reinforced when you went forward from Omar?
Well, yes, we'd gone on some bits of other battalions. And we'd also, by that time, we had got reinforcements up. Yes, I think we had. Not much. Not much.
You say odds and bits from other battalions. What?
Well, they tried to keep you in a county basis as best they could. But I mean, so they meant if you had East Surrey or Middlesex or something else like that, they were all right. You sent them up. I mean, we got some Queens. Because the Queens were. There was a Queen's Battalion in the 7th Armoured Division. And obviously they'd had some reinforcements, and somebody said the Royal Society is worse off than you are, and they gave us some Queens. Those are the odds and bits. It wasn't until much later that we really got, after the Benghazi, what we call the run back from Benghazi, when we were sent to Cyprus, did we get any reinforcements? And then that's another story. We had to get to Cyprus. We lost a quartermaster, all the clerical side, the whole of our quarter our Q side, and most of our orderly room side, our office side, all went in the bag. The whole down belly lot, the whole of the tail was cut off.
I think you were saying earlier on there that you'd had some men from the York and Lancaster.
The Yorks, Yorkshire, West Yorkshire.
West Yorkshire. Mm. Regiment.
As far as I remember, they were still with us at that time. In fact, I'm sure they were. They were the Omars with us. And they were inseparable. In fact, there was so much of the battalion. One from, when realised any longer they came from West Yorkshire.
So by the time of the Omar battle,
they were more Sussex than anybody else.
And how were they actually... Were they distributed amongst all the companies evenly?
Yeah, well, no, not evenly. They were distributed... And then companies varied in strength, and so you gave the company the lowest strength in most of them. But I think that, honestly, those, except for, as I say, the bits and pieces one got. You see, there was another thing that happened in the desert from time to time. A chap went sick. For any reason you can think of, went sick. When he came out of hospital... second day, O2E, which was an organisation which did the reposting, if he's Royal Sussex, and they found that the Queens were short, they said, right, ho, the Queens are terribly short, we'll send their chaps, who didn't come back, his own Talon. And this is how you got chaps lost from your battalion. Now, very unhappy chaps, they were, some of them were.
Did they manage to get back to their parents?
Well, they tried terribly hard after a bit, and if you got chaps particularly interested in them, CO and the adjutant, people like Kettle of Town, they would try and get them back by writing to the other CO and or doing a cross swap or something. But sometimes, no. Sometimes, no, you didn't. I mean, we lost all sorts of chaps like that to other people.
One final thing on the tactics of your own assault at Sidi Omar. You said that the once you were up and you were moving forward in an attack, you couldn't stop, you had to keep moving. Did your men actually fire while they were on the move?
No. Well, only in the last part of the assault. By that I mean the last 20 yards, perhaps. Mm. That's all.
And what sort of speed did they move at? Did they...
Again, an ordinary... fairly briskish walking speed to start with until the last sort of 20 yards, and you went in with a, you know, you dashed in with a bayonet and everything else firing as well. But this, it was no good stopping. This, do you remember they had a battle drill? Down, crawl, observe, fire. That was a thing taught. A lot of people, as a quick way of teaching people in the UK how to react to when being fired upon. Mm. Down, crawl, observe, fire. And we had the first sort of officers that came out like that, started, young officers came out like that, starting their, teaching their poop tunes in the middle of the desert. And this was almost catching on until company commanders noticed it until I guess and said, for God's sake. Oh, well, that's what they teach in England now, I dare say. But A, down, crawl, observe, fire. Observe from what? From where you are, lying on a flat bit of ground, 200 yards from the enemy, you're going to get up again before he shoots you? As you get up, he'll shoot you. Useless.
So you had to adopt the policy of the flight to the front then. Once you're fired on, you just keep moving.
You kept on going. You kept on going. If your casualties were between two gates and you obviously weren't going to get there, then the platoon commander or section commander, whoever it was, whatever, right, then you went down and you stayed down.
Until you could get up.
Until you could get up. Either as far as ceased, was less, or somebody else came through you.
I think that must have required a very high state of morale and training to do that, to keep moving.
It required extremely good officers and NCOs, for a start. And the fatal thing was that once one section on the left, that...